ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is May 14th, 2026, and our top story this morning is the Trump Xi Summit. Or at least that should be our top story. It should be groundbreaking news, this gathering of two of the most powerful men in the world, the leader of the free world, the leader of China, all in the same room. It should be like making all these headlines. And yet, as we sit here after our first few hours of this story, I can't help but wonder, you know, like in, you know, when you're doing your post-meeting wrap-up and we say, oh, was this an effective meeting? Did we add value? Were the right players involved? You ask that question, could this meeting have been an email? And I got to ask that question right now. Couldn't the Trump Xi summit have just been an email? And I got to give Mish credit for that. He came up with that during our briefing this morning. Look, this is kind of silly. Every CEO, I mean, you've got quadrillions of dollars worth of market cap traveled to China, representing all these different companies. And what came out of it? Well, China doesn't want to pay the toll on the Strait of Hormuz. That's one of the big takeaways. They're actually considering buying U.S. oil. Okay, that's new, but did we really need this big summit for that? By the way, the Chinese kind of screwing over the Iranians there. I think China values Iran as a thorn in America's side. But beyond that, they really have no use for the Iranians because they're like, oh, you want to charge us $2 million to transit the Strait? No, go F yourselves. And maybe that has something to do with that Chinese tanker that was carrying Iranian oil that got seized by the Iranians last week. Remember, I ran the headline, the Iranians just seized their own tanker. Yeah, China's not paying. So that's kind of news. That's a development there. China potentially buying U.S. oil. All right, that's interesting. By the way, that data point was noticeably absent from the Chinese readout of the meeting of the first day. Chinese really don't want to broadcast to their citizenry just how precarious their energy situation is. And I don't blame them for that. Were I a totalitarian dictator in the People's Republic of Jakistan, I probably wouldn't telegraph to my citizens that I am energy insecure. Also, we've got Schrodinger's beef exports. Agriculture is always a hot topic when the U.S. and China are getting together. Supposedly, there was a breakthrough and the Chinese were going to allow beef exports, exports of U.S. beef to China. Once again, that's something that disappeared during the trade flare-up. Very briefly, American beef exporters were approved and then unapproved very briefly out of that, inexplicably. So I don't know if we have bureaucratic nonsense going on here or the Chinese just dangling beef exports in front of us and then taking it away. Oh, you almost had it. Oh, so sorry. So that's going on. And of course, absent from the American readout of the first few hours of this Trump Xi summit is China's typically harsh language pertaining to Taiwan. China is not mincing words. They're basically saying, if you intervene, there's going to be war. If you don't, there won't. And well, the U.S. policy of strategic ambiguity is becoming less strategically ambiguous by the day. It's looking increasingly likely like that confrontation is going to happen. And just a reminder, the Davidson window, that famous military document, said 2027 was the ideal moment that the Chinese would roll. Also, we've got Cuba is on the brink this morning. The country has completely run out of diesel and fuel oil. The U.S. has been blockading Cuba of oil, especially since we took over Venezuela, or since we took Maduro in the middle of the night and then strongly suggested that Venezuela cooperate with U.S. policy moving forward, and they did. It's funny how that works. Cuba now has no energy. They typically got their energy from Venezuela. They haven't been able to, absent a stray cargo here and there. Nothing has gotten into the country, and now they've got protests in Havana. So I don't know how you survive. How does a country, even a country as destitute as Cuba, how do you survive without energy? I mean, the answer is you don't. It's just a matter of time. I just hope it's bloodless. I hope we can do this without shots being fired. Also going on this morning, Indian producer inflation, that came out even worse than ours was yesterday. And, you know, yesterday I made a very big deal about that PPI. The market sure didn't seem to care, but I guarantee you the average person, American consumers, are sure as hell going to care in a couple of months when those higher PPI prices bleed over in higher consumer prices. Well, India's even worse. India is less energy secure than we are, almost entirely dependent on oil imports, especially from the Middle East, which is nearby. And so their producer price is rising even faster. And this is as Kevin Warsh has just been approved as the next Fed chair. He sailed through Senate confirmation yesterday. I believe it was like a 54 to 45 vote, beat by a narrow margin. So Warsh will be the next Jay Powell. He will be the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. Powell is staying on at the Fed until the prosecution is behind him. So, yeah, what's Warsh going to do? Warsh was put there for the specific purpose, President Trump stated, that he wants rates cut. Is he going to cut into higher inflation? Almost certainly not, which means we've got more Trump v. Fed fireworks on the headline, on the horizon here as Warsh is walking into an inflationary shitstorm. We've got Cisco earnings, Cisco stock, absolutely ripping. Stop me if you've heard this one. Data centers, blah, 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 AI demand, blah, blah, blah. The demand is insane. Cisco only recently finally recovered its highs from 2000 from the dot-com bubble bursting. And ever since then, we'll look at the chart, just absolute blow off top in Cisco. If only there were signs, if only. They're also laying off 4,000 people. The market loves layoffs. We've got, I just love this story. Jensen Huang is doing some charity work now. Oh, that's good. He's such a swell guy, helping out the less fortunate. What kind of charity work is Jensen Huang doing, you might ask? It's funny you should ask that. Jensen Huang, his charitable foundation that he runs with his wife, is buying $108 million worth of AI compute from CoreWeave and donating it to AI researchers and nonprofits. Isn't that nice? The MFer is inflating his own sales using his charitable foundation, and he's getting a write-off for it. Oh, my God. Guys, what are we doing here? Are we still pretending that NVIDIA is not buying its own product to inflate its sales? Are we still pretending that NVIDIA isn't standing up these neo clouds as just one gargantuan accounting fraud that's aimed at blowing out their margins while the hyperscalers do the same thing, round-tripping, investing in their customers, forcing their employees to use AI products against their will to the point where they're using AI mouse jigglers to appear to be more productive so they can inflate their statistics and go on their stupid conference calls and talk about how the demand is insane. Crazy Eddie. Are we really doing this? They're charity now. Well, and you know, there's a lot of AI charity work going on. Remember, OpenAI was a charity. A $1 trillion charity. And, you know, Greg Brockman made $30 billion off of charity work. I mean, a lot of people make $30 billion doing charity work. It's really quite common. It's a totally normal thing for the 2020s. Coincidentally, also on the AI story, Lake Tahoe, city of 50,000 people, was just told they need to go ahead and find a new power source because a data center bought all their power. Oh, remember the executive order that says they can't do that? I thought data centers had to bring their own power. Well, I guess if you take it from a city, now it's yours. I'm bringing my own power. See how that works? Yep. City of 50,000 people. Better find a new power plant. Meanwhile, AI bond bender is underway. Alphabet is borrowing dollars, euros, pounds, francs, and yen as the hyperscalers tap liquidity anywhere and everywhere they can find it in order to pay for this infrastructure build-out. They are literally borrowing all the money in the world. Ford stock is soaring. Oh, you didn't hear? You guys didn't get the memo? Ford is an AI company now. Apparently, that's a thing. Stock rose 13% yesterday because some analysts wrote a note that said Ford is probably going to start selling batteries to data centers. Why not? They lost billions of dollars on this battery technology for electric vehicles that aren't selling. Sell them to the data centers. Why not? Now we're thinking outside the box. And speaking of losses on electric vehicles, Honda just posted their first annual loss since going public in 1957. Why? Because of electric vehicles. The same reason Ford is now a data center company. You know, the last bubble that I warned everybody about and people told me I was crazy for saying EVs was a bubble in 2021 and 2022. Oh, it turns out it was. You've got first loss in 70 years at Honda. And last but not least, if you're thinking about getting your oil changed or if you're due for an oil change in your vehicle, do not put it off. It's about to get a hell of a lot more expensive. Stick around for the end of the show for that one. Guys, we got a lot to talk about today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Hey, don't forget that like button and the subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every business day. The S&P 500 at the moment is up 27 points or 0.36% in the green this morning. The Dow is up 431 points, 0.87% higher. Stocks just continue this relentless rip, and the NASDAQ, no different, up 60 points or 0.2% higher. I'm sure Cisco is contributing to that move in the indexes this morning. Looking at the dollar, we are slightly higher this morning, 98.59. That's higher by 9 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, yields are red across the board after rising quite a bit over the last week or so. The 30-year yield, 5.010. That is lower by 3.5 points. The 10-year yield is at 4.441%, lower by 3 points and change. The 2-year yield is at 3.965, down by 2.5 points. And the 1-month is down a fraction of a point at 3.652. Looking over at the bond market, Bitcoin pretty much unchanged from yesterday, just barely below 80,000 here at 79,582. Noticing a couple of things here. We had a little bit of a dip, a little bit of a dip, a little bit of a dip, a little bit of a dip. Each time Bitcoin, just the dip buyers showed up. Does that mean we're going to continue here? I don't know. I still maintain that I don't think crypto winter is behind us yet. We've still got like another 6 months or so till historically we would be seeing the bottom. So a lot could happen in 6 months, especially 6 months in the 2020s. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold a little bit higher this morning, $14 in the green at $4,702 for spot gold. Spot silver is taking a break this morning, down about a buck or 1.17% lower, but still $86.51. Silver has been on a tear these last couple of days. We were flirting with 90 bucks a couple of hours ago or late yesterday. I think we got as high as 89 and change the other day. Couldn't quite break into the 90s. I'm watching that 92 level, though. That's, I want to see a move above that level. And then, it's another one of those all bets are off in silver moments if that happens. Copper, meanwhile, lower by 0.83%. Platinum down 4%. Palladium off by 3.8%. And crude oil's even down a fraction of a percent here. Still holding above $100 for June WTI crude at $100.37. Here's the oil chart, by the way. Not a lot of movement happening today. We did have some developments in the Middle East. The oil still above the 50-day moving average as it's been kind of bouncing off of that a few times here. Recent development here, a ship was taken in the Gulf of Oman and is heading to Iran. That's according to UKMTO. A UK naval group reported a commercial vessel was taken by unauthorized personnel at the entrance to the Strait of Hormuz and is now bound for Iranian waters, the latest indication of Tehran exerting control on shipping in the region. The ship was taken 38 nautical miles off the UAE in the Gulf of Oman, where it was at anchor. UK Maritime Trade Operations said in a statement, without identifying the vessel, that puts it close to the entrance of Hormuz and a significant distance off the coast of the UAE. The UKMTO liaises between the military and commercial shipping in the region. Now, this map here, let's see if I can bring up this image. This map is showing where the ship was seized. You notice it's kind of like right in the middle of the strait, but it is west, northwest of where the U.S. Navy has been operating the blockade. And so it's also pretty close to the port of Fujairah. And that is very important because Fujairah is that oil export terminal that is outside the Strait of Hormuz, where the UAE can still sell their oil without having to transit the strait. And it looks like the Iranians are trying to mess with the ships that are heading to that port to try to choke off oil flow out of that key area there. The U.S., in order to police that region, they'd have to get a little closer than they want to the Iranian coast, where they'd be in range of drones and any ship missiles. So that's a new development here. Iran just seizing a boat that was at anchor, not even transiting the strait, just sitting there. All right, on to the main story of the day. U.S. says China wants more of its oil to cut Middle East reliance. Again, this is the U.S. readout of the meeting. The Chinese readout doesn't mention the oil, and the Chinese readout basically says Taiwan is ours, back off, America. A White House official said that Chinese President Xi Jinping opposes efforts to charge a toll to navigate the Strait of Hormuz and is interested in purchasing more U.S. oil to reduce its dependence on the waterway in the future. Xi made the comments during his meeting with U.S. President Trump in Beijing on Thursday, according to the official. China's official readout of the meeting didn't include energy in the list of topics and that the two presidents discussed, although it did say that they talked about the Middle East. China is the world's largest importer of crude oil and natural gas, and the U.S. is the biggest producer of both. But shipments between the two countries ground to a halt last year after China imposed levies on the commodities in retaliation for Trump's sweeping tariffs on Chinese goods. I have not heard anything about tariffs since this meeting started, and you'd think that'd be a big deal, right? Tariffs probably a bone of contention between the two leaders. I don't hear about it. Does that mean they're not on the table? Again, if we're not talking about tariffs in a trade war, then what are we even talking about? Taiwan is off limits. Tariff is off limits. Maybe this could have just been an email. I don't know. China renews, then halts licenses for hundreds of U.S. beef exporters amid Trump's Xi summit. We've got Schrodinger's beef exports now as well. Chinese customs appeared to have halted export clearances for hundreds of U.S. beef plants on Thursday, just hours after Reuters reported the long-awaited licenses had been approved amid a summit between U.S. and Chinese presidents in Beijing. More than 400 U.S. beef plants lost export eligibility over the past year as Beijing's permissions granted between March 2020 and April 2021 lapsed without the customary renewal, accounting for roughly 65% of the once registered facilities. The renewal of the licenses would be a clear win for U.S. beef producers after the White House said in recent weeks that the issue would be raised at the summit. Their registration status, which had been listed as effective earlier on Thursday, later reverted to expired, the customs website showed. China's General Administration of Customs was not reachable by phone and did not immediately respond to faxed questions from Reuters about why the change had been made. So they very briefly allowed U.S. beef exports, it sounds like, and then changed their mind within a matter of hours. Does that mean there was some kind of hiccup that talks break down and we find out about it this way? Or is this some bureaucratic guy didn't get the memo that, hey, U.S. beef exports are cool now, and he still rejected it, acting on prior orders? I don't know. All I know is they went green and then they went red. And shout out to Cuppy, who posted this one on X yesterday. This is pretty funny. He posted this meme of President Trump. He says, if I play my cards right, Xi will buy the soybeans he probably intends to buy anyway, and I can declare a great victory in trade negotiations. This is really a performative summit here, guys. Taiwan is the big issue, and China is not bending on Taiwan. Trade is a big issue. Apparently, it's not even being discussed. And meanwhile, we bought all these CEOs. Why? I really don't know. I really don't know why we put all those CEOs on a plane and sent them to this summit, but that's what's happening. Meanwhile, Cuba runs out of diesel and fuel oil. This is pretty crazy. We've heard about Cuba, like that's the next Venezuela, although I think Iran was the next Venezuela, so Cuba would be the next Iran, and then Iran is the next Venezuela. Anyway, protests erupt as energy minister admits the island has absolutely no supplies or reserves. Protests erupted overnight in Cuba after the government said it had completely run out of diesel and fuel oil, the energy supplies essential to power its generation. Energy Minister Vincent de la Olevi blamed U.S. President Donald Trump's near total energy blockade of the communist island over the past 4 months for the crisis. Well, of course, that's why. We have absolutely no fuel oil and absolutely no diesel, he said on Wednesday in remarks carried out on state-run media. We have no reserves. Images shared on social media showed protests had broken out overnight in parts of the capital, Havana, with residents banging pots and pans and burning blockades in the streets. There were reports of clashes with police. Havana's long reliance on Venezuelan oil supplies, which it traded for Cuban doctors and spies. Okay, that's an unusual mix of exports there, doctors and spies. Spies like us, doctor. Anyway, it was severed in January when U.S. troops snatched hardline leader Nicolas Maduro. So Cuba completely out of fuel. You're not going to last long in that situation. So something's got to give here. Let's just hope it goes peaceful, whatever it is. Meanwhile, India's factory gate inflation jumps on higher energy prices. This is basically the same story we saw here in the U.S. yesterday with PPI, producer prices rising, except it's worse. India's producer prices surged to just over a 3.5-year high in April as elevated energy prices pushed up manufacturers' input costs. The wholesale price index rose 8.3% from a year earlier, up from 3.88% in March. It more than doubled and way above the 5.5% median estimate in Bloomberg's survey of economists. Okay, so obviously we are learning based on PPI in the States yesterday, and now the expectations of 5.5% producer inflation in India, where it ends up coming in at 8.3%. I think we've learned that the economists' estimates of producer price inflation are so much toilet paper. I think we've learned that because that's all it's useful for. They were so far off. The world is whistling past the graveyard on this energy shock. I've been saying it for weeks now, and you can see it here with India. The inflation comes in almost double what they forecast it was going to be. People are underestimating the energy shock here. I don't know how else to say it. Fuel and power led the increase, with inflation in the category jumping 24.71% in April from 1.05% a month earlier. In February, before the conflict with Iran, prices in the category had fallen 3.85%. Wow. So they went to negative 3.8 to positive 8.3 in 2 months. In 1 month. This is March data. Wow. I'm sorry. No, this is April data, up from 3.8 in March. Primary articles, which include raw materials, agricultural products, rose 9.17% compared with 6.3 in March. Yeah, inflation, it's higher, and it's not just here. It's worldwide. And just in time for Kevin Warsh, when sent confirmation as the next Federal Reserve chair. And I can tell you guys, it's going to be interesting to watch the next FOMC press conference. Kevin Warsh is first at the podium, because I think we're going to go from the cheerleading session that we normally got, where, you know, they do everything just shy of a reach around for Jay Powell. In this one, I think they're going to be out for blood. I think they're going to be fishing for sound bites of, oh, President Trump wants you to cut rates, and now you're not going to cut rates. What do you say to President Trump? Just trying to stoke that controversy, as only the press can do. And look, in their defense, they should. Warsh is put there to cut rates. He can't cut rates right now. Cutting rates right now would be the worst thing you could possibly do. And according to CME Fed Watch futures right now, the expectation for December, the end of this year, still a 66% chance that they do nothing. Just a 1.7% chance that we get one rate cut. And then look at the odds of rate hikes. Now 27.8% for one hike, 3.8% for two, and even a fraction of a point for three rate hikes. Guys, within a month, if that PPI yesterday was any indicator of what's coming in CPI, I think we're going to see this closer to 50% following the next CPI reading. Call me crazy, but I think we're going to see that. Meanwhile, Cisco soars on sales forecasts and AI-focused restructuring plan. That's right. Everybody's an AI company now, whether you actually do AI or not. It doesn't matter. Just put AI in your name, and this market will bid up your stock. That's not what's going on with Cisco here. They're actually selling stuff. Cisco Systems gained as much as 22% in pre-market trading after the company delivered better than anticipated sales forecasts and announced plans to cut thousands of jobs and attempt to focus on the fast-growing AI market. Revenue will be $16.7 to $16.9 billion in the fourth quarter, which runs through July, the company said in a statement Wednesday. Analysts estimated sales of $15.8 billion, so it was a big raise for Cisco. The news signaled that Cisco, a four-decade-old stalwart of Silicon Valley, is successfully pivoting to the AI economy. Orders from data center customers are accelerating, and the company's restructuring plan is designed to further improve its position. The company layoffs will affect fewer than 4,000 jobs, or less than 5% of the total employee base, CEO Chuck Robbins said in a blog post. Now, look at Cisco stock here. First of all, year-to-date, stock is up 14.8%, just ahead of the opening bell. You can't even see it. Here it is up here. Big gap up for Cisco stock here. It's up 32.2% year to date. Now let's zoom way out on this chart. This goes all the way back to the 1990s. Here's your dot-com bubble high. And look, Cisco in the dot-com bubble was sitting here, what, around $80 a share. We only took that level out a couple of weeks ago. And now already we're like 30% above that level. I mean, this is a blow-off top, a textbook example of a blow-off top when the stock just goes up in a straight line so fast it looks like the chart's going to curve backwards and start heading back in time. And it's the quintessential dot-com bubble stock that's doing it, if only there were signs. Speaking of signs, check this one out. NVIDIA CEO's foundation buys $108 million of AI computing from CoreWeave and donates it to researchers. Jensen Huang is getting a freaking write-off for this. This is a charitable contribution. Well, coincidentally, if we're also inflating the revenues of a customer who keeps buying our products and inflating our margins, well, that's, you know, there's no conflict of interest there or anything. That's just the stuff of conspiracy theories. Do we need to put this on? Do we need to don the tinfoil hat here? I mean, next thing you know, they'll be talking about taking away power from entire cities. I'm crazy, I know. A little foreshadowing there, perhaps. The foundation of NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang and his wife, Lori, is buying computing time from CoreWeave and donating it to universities and other nonprofit institutes, you know, like the nonprofit OpenAI Foundation, according to a filing that valued the donation at $108.3 million so far, as in it might get bigger. According to the filing on Tuesday, the computing resources will be used for science and artificial intelligence research. NVIDIA plans to offer free engineering services to some of the grant recipients, it said in a filing. While the gift demonstrates Huang's largesse, it also represents another support measure from NVIDIA to CoreWeave. Oh, you think? Are we talking about that now? That's a cloud computing company that specializes in AI applications. NVIDIA designs the graphics processing units, or GPUs, that CoreWeave offers customers. In January, NVIDIA invested $2 billion in CoreWeave to become, at the time, the company's second largest shareholder. NVIDIA also signed a $6.3 billion deal last year for cloud computing capacity with CoreWeave that guarantees the AI chip company will purchase any cloud capacity not sold to customers or Jensen Huang's charity. And the chip giant has drawn scrutiny for investing billions of dollars in AI firms, including ChatGPT maker OpenAI and NeoClouds, raising investor concerns about potential circular financing. Oh, really? Potential circular financing? That crazy rando conspiracy theory that NVIDIA is just secretly buying their own product by propping up NeoClouds. What will those Twitter randos come up with next? This is clearly just from the benevolence of Jensen Huang, the boob signing CEO. He just wants to help people. And, you know, if he's buying $108 million worth of rental of his own product, thus further inflating his own sales, that's really just a crazy coincidence. And there's nothing to see here. I'm told it's a big nothing burger. I mean, the next thing you know, these conspiracy theorists will be telling you that entire cities are going to be left without power for these pointless data centers. Oh, look, Lake Tahoe's major energy source is being diverted to power energy data centers. What are the odds? The planned cutoff has sparked a great deal of concern among residents and businesses worried about possible disruptions. Lake Tahoe residents are the latest community to fight back against AI data centers after thousands of people have been told their power could be cut off to supply new projects. Nevada-based NV Energy will stop providing 75% of Liberty Utilities electricity for California side of Lake Tahoe by May 2027, affecting about 49,000 customers to meet growing demand from AI-driven data centers in Nevada, Fortune reports. It's like we don't exist, says Danielle Hughes, a North Lake Tahoe resident and CEO of the nonprofit Tahoe Spark and a supervisor within the California Energy Commission's division. The shift means that Liberty Utilities has less than a year to secure a new power supplies to replace most of its electricity supply as regional energy demand continues to rise. Meanwhile, Lake Tahoe residents are pushing back against AI data centers, saying they're driving up energy costs and straining the local grid. You don't say. Yep, a whole city told, good luck, you got to find a new power supply. As this goes on, the AI companies, the hyperscalers, are literally buying every dollar, yen, pound, franc, and euro in existence in order to keep up this ridiculous game of CapEx chicken. AI bond binge overwhelms Wall Street and pushes Alphabet abroad. Bankers were still putting the final touches on Alphabet's blockbuster $17 billion of bond sales when word started to spread Monday morning on Wall Street that the company is already hawking more debt. This time it was yen. Alphabet's executives had stayed up through the night to get on with Tokyo investors and pitch the deal. The week prior, it had been in euros and Canadian dollars, and a few months before that, dollars, pounds, and Swiss francs. In all, Alphabet will have raised close to $60 billion by the time the yen sale is finalized, a four-month run that ranks as one of the greatest corporate borrowing binges ever. Amazon's doing the same thing. Meta is doing the same thing. Both the sheer scale of the fundraising quadrupled the amount of bonds Alphabet sold in its first 26 years in business combined, and the span the global approach it took to pull it off has put the tech giant at the forefront of a race to fund an artificial intelligence build-out expected to cost nearly $5 trillion by the end of 2030. All told, tech companies have already sold more than $300 billion of debt to U.S. investors to fund AI spending. $300 billion of this garbage has been, I'm telling you, it's in your 401ks and your pensions. That's where this stuff is winding up. But luckily, your 401ks and pensions are already invested in the shares of this company. So when this bubble bursts, both the debt and the equity will go down in unison so they can hold hands on the way down. And Wall Street bankers say they will, one by one, follow Alphabet's lead and tap overseas markets because they can't depend on America alone to finance those sorts of ambitions, not without overwhelming demand and sending funding costs sharply higher. And I was talking about this earlier this year. There is literally nowhere else in the world to go to get the money. They have tried everyone. They've tried the government. They're now tapping the bond market. They tried the Middle East. There's just not enough money in the world to keep this bubble growing at the rate it's going. Some signs of stress are already emerging. While tech stocks keep soaring, lifting benchmark equity indexes, returns on their debt have been lagging those generated by investment-grade markets as a whole. The reality is that there's so much need for depth that they have to tap every single source of liquidity that they can, said Nanda Kamat, global head of project finance at Royal Bank of Canada, which helped lead Alphabet's $8.5 billion Canadian dollars bond sale last week, the country's biggest ever. And look at that. They have to tap every single source of liquidity they can. They're literally borrowing all the money in the world to pay for Lake Tahoe having no power and Jensen Huang's charitable contributions. And now Ford is a data center company, apparently. Ford soars most in 6 years on possible hyperscaler tie-ups. Ford stock surged on Wednesday after Morgan Stanley issued a bullish call that the automaker's energy storage business could soon make a deal with hyperscalers. Shares climbed 13%, cementing the stock's biggest one-day gain since March of 2020 and helping it turn positive for the year. We believe that there is a fairly high likelihood that Ford signs an energy storage system supply agreement with large commercial customers and potentially hyperscalers over the next few months, Morgan Stanley analyst Andrew Percoco said. So Ford loses billions of dollars on investments in electric vehicles and their batteries. Now they're sitting on all these batteries. Like, what the heck do we do with them? I know. We'll sell them to data centers. And look at what Ford stock did yesterday. Look at that green candle. 13.2% higher. It's up another fraction of a percent this morning, trading at $13.65 off of what? Off of a business that they lost billions of dollars on, maybe finding a new home in data centers, which half of which they promised are not going to get built. And just a reminder, how big were those losses in EVs? Well, look at Honda. Honda posts its annual loss on $9 billion EV write-down and scraps EV sales goals. That other bubble that Jack warned about. Honda posted its first annual loss in nearly 70 years as a listed company on Thursday, hit by more than $9 billion in cost to restructure its electric vehicle business, and the firm scrapped its long-term EV sales target. Just sell your EVs to data centers, Honda. Look what Ford did. Come on, man. Revealing its worst financial report since Honda listed on the stock market in 1957 underscores how risky an aggressive bet on electric vehicles can be for a legacy automaker when it slams into weaker than expected demand. Oh, if you like what they did to EVs with that overinvestment and weaker than expected demand, just wait until you see what the data centers do. Its operating loss totaled 414 billion yen for the year ended March. That's about $2.63 billion. That's compared with a median estimate of 315 billion yen. So it was a bigger loss than expected and a 1.2 trillion yen profit a year earlier. Honda booked total EV-related losses of 1.45 billion yen for the business year ended in March and expects to face an additional cost of 500 billion yen for the year. That compares with EV write-down costs of up to 2.5 trillion yen that Honda estimated in March. The company still expects to return to profitability this year, though, forecasting a 500 billion yen profit on cost reduction measures and its profitable motorcycle business. All right, apparently Honda's selling a lot of bikes. And last but not least, don't wait for that oil change, folks. The Iran war is going to make your car's oil change more pricey. The Iran war is throwing a niche corner of the oil market into disarray as fallout from scrambled supply chains for the commodity reaches all the way to the automotive, maintenance, and industrial sectors. By the way, I got to send a shout out to my friend Apostaman, who has been warning me about this for a couple of days. Some of his friends in the auto industry were talking about this. And here it is in Bloomberg. Energy inflation is rippling through the U.S. economy with the retail price of gasoline and diesel approaching all-time highs, fueling the worst inflation in years. Now a broad group of industrial lubricants known as base oils are in very short supply with no signs of easing on the horizon. The U.S. imports about 44% of its supply of what's known as Group 3 base oil, the raw material used to make motor oil from the Middle East, Independent Lubricant Manufacturers Association CEO Holly Alfano said in an interview. One of the major suppliers of that industrial oil, Shell's Pearl GTL facility in Qatar, was damaged in the March 18th attacks on Ras Laffan Industrial City. The oil giant said it will take about a year to repair portions of the energy complex. This is just the beginning, Alfano said. Shortages are imminent, and by next month, finding adequate supply is going to be a major issue, she added. Take that seriously, guys. Shortages imminent. By next month, it's going to be hard to find adequate supply. So if you're due for an oil change, go get your oil changed. Don't wait, or you're going to pay more to do it next month. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Thank you very much also to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.